Hello and welcome. My name is Zach Weaver, and I'm the senior pastor at Liberty Vineyard Church. I'm so glad you tuned in to the sermon today. I hope that it blesses, encourages, and challenges you as you begin to explore the abundant life God has for you. If you're in the area, consider joining us for our weekly services, Sunday mornings at 10:30. We have lunch together, free of charge, each week following our service. Everyone is welcome. We're located in the city of Tucker, Georgia, a suburb of Atlanta. Directions and other information are available on our website at libertyvineyardchurch.com. So I brought with me today our family tree, my wife and I's family tree, and at the bottom of the trunk are my three kids' names. And the way the family tree works is it kind of works in reverse from what you might think. You might think at the roots, at the foundation, would be kind of the founding people of it, but it's really that all of the branches that split off, all of the different areas, are connections that kind of slowly come together. One branch connects to another, those two branches form another, and then that one connects on. But the way the family tree works is it slowly trickles down, one branch moving into another, until all of these different places connect at whatever point you're in right then. And so this family tree is for my kids' generation. And so both splits away from the trunk are one side is my side of the family, and the other side is my wife's side of the family above that, and so on and so forth. We call these kind of things, this study of the family tree, this study of this is called your lineage. You might call it your heritage, your ancestry. Some people even call it your legacy. That just looks back on the life that's before the point you're in right now. And it looks back over the years. Sometimes people are able to trace these back over the centuries, looking back at where life has been, what has been in your family, what's in your history. Some people live out of their ancestry, try to live according to the legacy or the things that have been built up in life before them, living according to those directions. If you've had perhaps maybe, we watch sometimes this show on TV where they have people that live in these houses, these castles actually in Scotland. And they have on the walls all of the portraits of the history of the people, and they live, and when they speak about how they live according to this legacy of people, of what's been sort of expected. Other times, people feel like they have to live up to the legacy or the heritage, that there's something that they have to try to do or prove or show themselves to be worthy. Others just want to find a way, how can I escape from this heritage? And I don't know where you are in all of those things. I think a lot of times when we look back in our family, there are lots of different things we might encounter. Some things that we want to admire and look up to. Some things we wish that we could escape from. And others that might really influence or change what we knew about ourselves and our understanding. How does knowing where you've come from, how does knowing your heritage or your legacy change who you are? But more importantly, how does knowing that change where you're going? You see, being able to establish a heritage, being able to lay claim to a lineage, being able to understand what you are part of, gives you a bigger picture understanding of where you might be going. Today, we're going to talk about two types of heritage. We're going to talk about an adopted heritage, and we're going to talk about an eternal heritage. In John 1, chapter 1, the apostle writes, in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. And see, in this statement is revealed the eternal nature of God existing in the person of Jesus. In the beginning was Jesus. And Jesus was with God, and Jesus was God. And he was with God in the beginning. In John's gospel, more than any other, the apostle goes to great lengths to establish and to show the heritage, the lineage of Jesus as the Son of God, but not just the Son of God, as God himself. And through a series of statements that really provide markers throughout the book of John, there are these series of statements that they call the I Am statements. Now, we're in a series right now called I Am, and we're looking beyond the scope of just John, but the book of John has a concentration of these statements. And see, the I Am statements of Jesus are declarations of heritage. They're declarations of lineage. They're declarations of things that connect beyond just the scope of who Jesus is in this moment. They are connections like this family tree. You see, my kids all have the same last name that I have. All of my kids' last name is Weaver. And that name carries with it a certain heritage. But there's another side of that tree that, as soon as it splits off, is my wife's side of the tree. And her name has a different heritage. What is it in a name that carries that lineage, that carries that heritage? And what is it that Jesus is trying to establish with these statements of I am? Psalm 46:10 says, "Be still and know that I am." You see, historically, the Jews trusted God for stability in their lives. See, we all kind of deal with these, with struggles in our lives in some way. We all deal with worry or with fear in different ways. We always are having to figure out, it usually is based on something of like, what's going to come next? What are we going to encounter? Fear of the unknown. It might be fear that there may be repercussions for something we've done. Fear that we won't live up to what is expected of us. Fear that something may not come out the way that we wanted it to. But the fear and the worry all tend to be centered around this idea of instability, this idea of the unknown. And historically, the Jews trusted in God for that stability. Why? Because there was a history of it. There was a proof of God following through with what he said he was due. There was a proof of God being there to provide in all circumstances. From the initial outset of their walk, there was a history of God walking with the people, of him providing for all of their needs, of him sheltering them, and him promising things and then delivering on the promise. And the history of that led to this great amount of stability in their lives where they knew, I can trust God. To a point, the Israelites had walked with God when they left Egypt for a long time, for this 40-year period. They had walked with God in the desert, and there had been this visible reminder. I talked about this a few weeks ago, but this visible reminder of God's presence that went with them every day. They saw the pillar of cloud by day, the pillar of fire by night. They ate manna from heaven every day. They had visible reminders of God in the camp with them all day long, surrounded by this stability of, I know that God is with me, God will take care of me, God will protect me. And then they got to the promise. They got to the whole purpose of the journey, the promised land. And unfortunately, when they got to the promised land, something really unexpected happened. That visible reminder, that visible presence of God, that daily provision of bread, that daily reminder of His presence was going to go away. And so God, at the end of Exodus, the end of Deuteronomy, excuse me, in the beginning of Joshua, makes this eternal promise. I will never leave you or forsake you. Do not fear. I will never leave you or forsake you. Why does he need to say that? Because it's going to look like he's leaving them. It's going to look like he's not there anymore, and he wants them to know you can still count on me and trust in me. The way you believed in me in the past is the way I will be in the future. Why? Because of a heritage, because of a lineage and a history of action. I ended last week by saying, I can say that I am this person. I can tell you I'll do this and do that. But if I don't back it up, it's really meaningless. My words of who I am don't matter. All that matters is if I can back up my word with consistency. If what I claim to be is who I'm shown to be, and if what I claim to be and I say is what I actually do. And so for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, the Jews trusted in God for this kind of stability, because God had proved through prophets, through words, through action, through promises, that he is who he said he was. And he did what he said he was going to do. And he followed through with all of his promises. So what does that have to do with Jesus? Well, see, just like this moment when all of the travel, all of the journey that the Israelites had made culminated in their arrival at the promised land. So the disciples came into a moment. You see, the disciples had been following Jesus for 3 years. Like the Israelites, they had left everything to follow him. They had left their livelihood, they'd left their businesses, they'd left their families, and they had joined up with this man and followed him. And now at the end of his life, at the end of his time on earth, he begins to talk with them. And he begins to say some things that are making them kind of nervous. Because like God, he begins to tell them some things about how it's going to look a little different. It's getting ready to change. You've had this visible reminder, he tells them, of me. You've had me in your presence. You see me, you can touch me, and you've walked with me. You've heard my words. You've felt me near. But I'm getting ready to go. He says, in a little while, you won't see me anymore. But then you'll see me again. And he begins to tell them these different things of what's going to happen to them. He begins to share with them what has to be suffered by the Messiah. And he begins to talk to them about how he's going to leave. And of course, the disciples, like the Israelites, begin to get kind of nervous. They start to be afraid. And they start to wonder, what in the world is he talking about? What does he mean? They say that now you'll see me in a little while, you won't see me, and then you'll see me again. And so Jesus gathers them together. And in John 14, he says these famous words, "Let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me." Now that's a pretty loaded statement. What does he mean, you believe in God, believe also in me? What's he asking them to do? So he says, you've trusted God historically. Now trust in me. He's establishing a lineage, a heritage. His time on earth has been to show a way to get to God through the person of Jesus, through himself. And to do that, he needs to show that he's not just a good person. He needs them to understand that he's not just an amazing teacher. He needs them to understand he's not just a prophet. He's not just somebody that's special that God's hand on. You remember all of the different times people would gather together and they'd say, you know, teacher, we know that nobody could do the things that you do unless God was with them. Great. But it's more than that. And he needed them to know that it was more than that. The lineage and the heritage of the words may not be proof enough to just say it. And Jesus acknowledges that. At the end of that whole little dissertation, he tells the disciples about that. He says, believe that I'm in the Father and the Father is in me, or else just believe on the accounts of the works themselves. You've seen God act in the midst of us. You've seen the way that God has acted. You've seen the miracles. You've seen how he has provided for you. You've seen how he has sheltered you from the storm. You've seen how he's calmed the waves. You've seen how he's allowed me to walk on water. You've seen me heal the sick and cast out demons. You've seen the blind see. You've seen the lame walk. You believe in God. Now believe in me. See, he's asking them not to be worried or afraid. But how does believing in God help him with that? Believing in God doesn't necessarily carry the same kind of weight today as it did back then. When you said you believed in God, when you trusted in God, you weren't just saying it with your words. It meant that you were trusting in a heritage. You were believing in the promises of God. You were believing in the legacy of God. You were exchanging all that you had before for the person of God and saying, I am not going to follow this way anymore. I'm exchanging all of my idols. I'm taking all of my beliefs. I'm taking all of these things and I'm pushing them aside because both things can't exist simultaneously. And I am trusting fully and wholly in God. And God knows this and he understands it, and he understands that the Israelites are going into this new land, and in this new land there's a chance that they might be swayed to follow other gods. And Jesus knows that the disciples are getting ready to be in uncharted territory, and he knows that they might be swayed, that they might want to fall away. In fact, he is certain that they will fall away. God says, I will never leave you or forsake you. Jesus says, I am with you always, even until the end of the age. In fact, he tells them in this passage, when he says, believe in God, believe also in me, he says, in my Father's house, there are many rooms, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to prepare a place for you so that you can be where I am. He wants them to understand it's going to look different, but that he is not going to be apart from them. He says, I won't leave you as orphans. I will be with you always. That word that Jesus tells them when he says, believe in God, believe also in me, the believe word, like I said, it doesn't quite carry the same weight. It's an interesting word. It comes from two words. One is faith. The other is persuade. It means that you have been persuaded that something will happen because you've seen it happen in the past. And now you're able to believe for something that you haven't seen happen yet because of the persuasion of the past. In other words, you've been persuaded that God will be there for you, that he'll comfort you, that he'll protect you. now be persuaded that I will do the same. See, Jesus needed to know who they believed him to be. They needed others to believe that he was more than just a good man. The I am statements of Jesus are connecting to statements of God from the past. The Bible is just bookended with these statements. Beginning and end and all throughout is filled with them. I read that it's more than 300 times in Scripture that I am is stated with this meaning. We'll talk more about that next time. But by declaring these things, by saying, you believe in God, now believe also in me, he puts himself in that same lineage of God. And John wants to make that really clear. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. And the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Our heritage can carry with it a lot of baggage. Our heritage can carry with it a lot of complication. Just like the family tree, there's one line that is the same name, constant, all the way down. And there's another line that are constantly grafted in. These grafting processes are joining together two different heritages, two different lineages, to create something new, something different, something a little bit from each. The language that we use in the Bible when we turn to faith in Jesus is that we are now adopted into his kingdom. That we are brought in alongside. And I want to dig deeper into this next time. But I want us to think today. I'm just going to leave you with this fact of it, actually. When you are adopted, I've told you before about our friends that adopt, have 9 children that they've adopted. When you adopt, the child that you adopt, well, let's put ourselves in that. Let's pretend we're adopted. When you're adopted, you don't lose your physical characteristics. You don't lose the traits of how you look. It doesn't suddenly, you don't become this completely different looking person. Right? I mean, you still look like you. If you're adopted from another country, you're still going to have that same kind of country's heritage. If you're adopted from a country that speaks another language, you're still going to have the accent of this other country. None of that stuff changes. There are some physical attributes that remain the same. However, your life will begin to take on a different type of heritage. You begin to take on the characteristics, the mannerisms, the way you think and feel and act of the family that you've been adopted into. When you're adopted into God's kingdom, there's an eternal heritage that we are adopted into. And there's an earthly heritage that remains part of us. We retain our earthly heritage, but our life begins to take on the characteristics of our new heavenly family. Begins to take on this new DNA. Like I say, we'll talk and dig more into that next week. But I want us to understand this idea of being grafted into a new family. And we'll talk about how Jesus lived this life in both an eternal heritage and a worldly heritage. We don't think about Jesus being adopted very often. But we're going to talk a little bit about the adoption for Jesus as well. For now, let me pray for you. Let's close there. God, I thank you that you have given us that you have maintained who you are consistently throughout generations. You are unchanging. Your word is the same. Your name is the same. And Lord, when you came in the person of Jesus, that we could now encounter the great I am in a physical way. Lord, I thank you that you have loved us and adopted us. I pray for those who are apart from you, God, that you would draw them in and draw them near. I thank you for those who are counted among your family. We praise you and give you glory and honor in Jesus' name. Amen.